Scripture reading this evening will be in the book of 1 Kings, chapter 21, verses 1 through 16. 1 Kings 21, verses 1 through 16. And it came to pass after these things that Naboth the Jezreelite had a vineyard, which was in Jezreel, hard by the palace of Ahab, king of Samaria. And Ahab spake unto Naboth, saying, Give me the vineyard, that I may have it for a garden of herbs, because it is near unto my house, and I will give thee for it a better vineyard than it, or if it seem good to thee, I will give thee the worth of it in money. And Naboth said to Ahab, Jehovah forbid it me, that I should give the inheritance of my fathers unto thee. And Ahab came into his house heavy and displeased, because of the word which Naboth the Jezreelite had spoken to him. For he had said, I will not give thee the inheritance of my fathers. And he laid him down on his bed, and turned away his face, and would eat no bread. But Jezebel, his wife, came to him and said unto him, Why is thy spirit so sad, that thou eatest no bread? And he said unto her, Because I spake unto Naboth, the Jezreelite, and said unto him, Give me thy vineyard for money, or else, if it please thee, I will give thee another vineyard for it. And he answered, I will not give thee my vineyard. And Jezebel, his wife, said unto him, Dost thou now govern the kingdom of Israel? Arise, and eat bread, and let thy heart be merry. I will give thee the vineyard of Naboth the Jezreelite. So she wrote letters in Ahab's name, and sealed them with his seal, and sent the letters unto the elders and to the nobles that were in the city, and that dwelt with Naboth. And she wrote in the letters, saying, Proclaim a fast, and set Naboth on high among the people, and set two men, base fellows, before him, and let them bear witness against him, saying, Thou didst curse God and the king, and then carry him out and stone him to death. And the men of his city, even the elders and the nobles who dwelt in his city, did as Jezebel had sent unto them, according as it was written in the letters which she had sent unto him, and unto them. They proclaimed a fast, and set Naboth on high among the people. And the two men, the base fellows, came in and sat before him, and the base fellows bear witness against him, even against Naboth, in the presence of the people, saying, Naboth did curse God and the king. Then they carried him forth out of the city and stoned him to death with stones. Then they sent to Jezebel, saying, Naboth is stoned and is dead. And it came to pass, when Jezebel heard that Naboth was stoned and was dead, that Jezebel said to Ahab, Arise, take possession of the vineyard of Naboth the Jezreelite, which he refused to give thee for money. For Naboth is not alive, but dead. And it came to pass, when Ahab heard that Naboth was dead, that Ahab rose up to go down to the vineyard of Naboth the Jezreelite to take possession of it. That's 1 Kings 21, verses 1 through 16.
When we read this text, we can't help but be impressed with wicked people. Perhaps I should say depressed with wicked people. Wickedness abounds, and we see that existing in this Old Testament text, and we see that certainly existing on the part of Ahab and Jezebel. In our study tonight, as we have for the past few Sunday nights, we've been talking about, or trying to, lessons that I know that the little ones have been studying. I was talking with Caitlin a little while ago. I said, I want to talk with you tonight about Ahab, Jezebel, and Naboth. And she said, Papa, we're already past that. We're talking about Elijah going up in a fiery chariot. So, hopefully this will be good for the rest of us to talk about Ahab, Jezebel, and Naboth, and perhaps there will be something in it that will be helpful to remember for the little ones, as I know that you've already studied that. But in the reading of this text, we see wickedness abound. But it's important, I think, to note the history that leads up to some of these things. Turn back with me, if you will, to 1 Kings chapter 16. 1 Kings chapter 16. In verse 29, 1 Kings chapter 16, it says, In the 38th year of Asa, king of Judah, began Ahab, the son of Omri, to reign over Israel. And Ahab, the son of Omri, reigned over Israel in Samaria 22 years. And Ahab, the son of Omri, did that which was evil in the sight of Jehovah above all that were before him. And it came to pass, as if it had been a light thing for him to walk in the sins of Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, that he took to wife Jezebel, the daughter of Ethbaal, king of the Sidonians. and went and served Baal and worshipped him. And he reared up an altar for Baal in the house of Baal, which he had built in Samaria. And Ahab made the Asherah, and Ahab did yet more to provide Jehovah, the God of Israel, to anger than all the kings of Israel that were before him. In his day did Hiel the Bethlehemite build Jericho, and of course that's a lesson in and of itself. But I want to notice some of these thoughts about Ahab. He's described as a very wicked king. In verses 30 and 31, he did that which was evil in the sight of Jehovah above all that were before him. Now there were some evil kings in the northern 10 tribes. Ahab is the seventh of those kings. As we look further in this text, in verse 31, he took of the daughter of the king of Sidon to be his wife, Jezebel. Now we might look at that and say, well, what's so bad about that? Well, there was a reason that God had given instruction for the people of Israel not to intermarry with the heathen nations round about them. In Deuteronomy chapter 17, beginning, if you would please, in verse 1. Deuteronomy chapter 17, beginning in verse 1. The text tells us, "Thou shalt not sacrifice unto Jehovah thy God an ox or a sheep, wherein is a blemish or anything evil, for that is an abomination unto Jehovah thy God. If there be found in the midst of thee within any of thy gates which Jehovah thy God giveth thee, man or woman, that doeth that which is evil in the sight of Jehovah thy God in transgressing his covenant, and hath gone and served other gods and worshipped them, or the sun or the moon, or any of the host of heaven which I have not commanded, and it be told thee, and thou hast heard it, then shalt thou inquire diligently, and behold, if it be true, and the thing certain that such abomination is wrought in Israel, then shalt thou bring forth that man or that woman who hath done this evil thing unto the gates, even the man or the woman, and thou shalt stone them to death with stones." Now that's simple enough. If there be found anybody that worships other gods, you get rid of that. You bring them out and you stone them. If you'll turn back a few pages to Deuteronomy chapter 7, we see why. In Deuteronomy chapter 7, begin at verse 1. "For there it says, when Jehovah thy God shall bring thee into the land, whither thou goest to possess it, and shall cast out many nations before thee, the Hittite, and the Girgashite, and the Amorite, the Canaanite, and the Perizzite, and the Hivite, and the Jebusite, seven nations, greater and mightier than thou. And when Jehovah thy God shall deliver them up before thee, and thou shalt smite them, then thou shalt utterly destroy them, thou shalt make no covenant with them, nor show mercy unto them. Neither shalt thou make marriages with them. Thy daughter thou shalt not give unto his son, nor his daughter shalt thou take unto thy son, for he will turn away thy son from following me, that they may serve other gods, so with the anger of Jehovah be kindled against you, and he will destroy thee quickly." You see why they were to be stoned? Why they were to be put away from the people of God? They were not to intermarry with the heathen nations round about them, lest they cause them to turn away from God and serve other gods. But Ahab married Jezebel. Jezebel was the daughter of the king of the Sidonians. Ahab's messed up. He's violated the commandment of God. But as we turn back to 1 Kings chapter 16, we see that Baal worship has been introduced among the people of God. The wife of Ahab, Jezebel, being from the Sidonians, or certainly the king of the Sidonians, she worshipped Asherah. And as she worshipped Asherah, Ahab built an altar or a place of worship for both of them. Well, certainly, Ahab has messed up. He's worshipping idols big time. But as we look further, get on that chart, concerning the history of these things, turn forward, if you will, to 1 Kings chapter 18. In 1 Kings chapter 18, regarding Jezebel, Jezebel had an impact among the people of God. She had a great impact upon her husband. In chapter 18, in verse 4, it says, "For it was so, when Jezebel cut off the prophets of Jehovah, that Obadiah took 100 prophets and hid them by 50 in a cave and fed them with bread and water." Obadiah was good. He was trying to protect the prophets of God, but she slain all of them but 100. Further in this same chapter, in verse 13, it says, "Was it not told my Lord that I did, or what I did when Jezebel slew the prophets of Jehovah, how I hid 100 men of Jehovah's prophets by 50 in a cave and fed them with bread and water?" You see, Obadiah has preserved the life of 100 men. What's happened to the rest of them? Jezebel killed them. Now, Jezebel is not a nice lady, but all of these things are leading up to some of the things that we want to talk about. We're going to talk more about the character of Jezebel in just a moment. But in the 18th chapter of the book of 1 Kings, we see the contest between the prophet Elijah and these false prophets. We've talked about that earlier as we talked about Elijah. And we know that the contest was that you choose two bullocks. You take out of them one, and I'll take the other. You prepare your sacrifice, and you call upon your gods, and see if your gods will consume the offering. I'll call upon the God of heaven and see if He consumes the offering. You're familiar with that. We'll not reiterate that. You recall how that God sent forth fire from heaven and consumed the altar and licked up the water that was in the trench that was round about the altar. The people then, in verse 39, recognized that Jehovah, He is God. He is God. We see that repeated. Consequently, we learn that Elijah, in verse 40, it tells us, "Take the prophets of Baal, and let not one of them escape." And they took them, and Elijah brought them down to the brook Kishon and slew them there. The prophets of Baal are dead. As we look up in the 19th chapter, verse 1, "And Ahab told Jezebel all that Elijah had done, and with all how he had slain all the prophets with the sword." False prophets did. Elijah did that. That sets the stage for the things that are about to come. In chapter 19, in verse 2, it says, "Then Jezebel sent a messenger unto Elijah, saying, So let the gods do to me and more also, if I make not thy life as the life of one of them by tomorrow about this time." Now we see that Elijah had an adverse reaction to that threat, but what we want to note here is that Jezebel threatens the life of the prophet of God. Now in what I'm going to refer to is kind of a parenthesis of events, Ben-Hadad, the king of the Syrians, come up against, he and his army, against Ahab and the northern kingdom of Israel. We see that in 1 Kings chapter 20. Ahab is victorious in the battle. He kills all of the army except Ben-Hadad, who flees, escaped, it tells us in verse 20, on a horse with horsemen. And then we learn that the prophet of God has told Ahab that you should have killed Ben-Hadad too. Look, if you will, at verse 22. "And the prophet came near to the king of Israel and said unto him, Go strengthen thyself and mark and see what thou doest. For at the return of the year, the king of Syria will come up against thee." Now he's letting go. Let him get away. And the prophet of God is telling him in a year he's going to come again. And if you read further in verse 23, "And the servants of the king of Syria said unto him, Their God is a God of the hills, therefore they were stronger than we. But let us fight against them in the plain, and surely we will be stronger than they." All right, so Ben-Hadad and his army now come against the northern kingdom of Israel in the plains. And once again, they are defeated. And God said, the reason for that is that ye shall know that I am Jehovah, verse 28. Now, how many times does it take God to show His people, I am Jehovah? But once again, King Ahab messes up. In the latter few verses of this chapter, we see that the children of Israel, in verse 29, slew of the Syrians 100,000 footmen in one day. In verse 30 it tells us, but the rest fled to Aphek, the end of the city, and the wall fell upon 27,000 men that were left, and Ben-Hadad fled and came into the city, into the inner chamber. Now, in the next paragraph, we learn that Ben-Hadad makes a plea for his life. And in verse 34, it tells us, and Ben-Hadad said unto him, the cities which my father took from thy father I will restore. And thou shalt make streets for thee in Damascus, as my father made in Samaria. And I, said Ahab, will let thee go with this covenant. So he made a covenant with him and let him go. Now that's twice. That's twice that Ben-Hadad, the enemy of God's people, has been allowed to go away. Now toward the end of this chapter, the prophet of God came unto him and said in verse 42, thus saith Jehovah, because thou hast let go out of thy hand the man whom I devoted to destruction, therefore thy life shall go for his life, and thy people for his people. And the king of Israel went into his house heavy and displeased, and came to Samaria. Now that sets the stage for the things that we want to talk about, showing why Ahab is so bitter, why he is so down. And as we look at this text, it's because God has just told him, Mr. Ahab, you're going to die. I delivered Ben-Hadad, the king of Syria, into your hand twice, and you let him go. So now it's going to be your house for his. And that's precisely how that's going to happen. Now, if you'll turn the page and drop down into chapter 21, we read just a few moments ago about how that Ahab desires to have the vineyard of Naboth. Now, once again, I want to call to your memory, in chapter 17, in verses 30 and 31, the wickedness of Ahab. None as bad as Ahab. He's back like it was during the days of Jeroboam. Nobody has excited the wrath of God since that time like Ahab has. Now we need to note that. It tells us that he's known for his wickedness. But what does he do? In 1 Kings chapter 21, he came to Naboth and he said, give me thy vineyard. Now that's interesting to me for a lot of reasons. But one is that Ahab had the authority in some respects to demand that because he was king. Now we'll look in other aspects where he didn't have the right to demand that. But if you'll turn back to 1 Samuel chapter 8. 1 Samuel chapter 8. You recognize that chapter. That was where the people of Israel asked that Samuel appoint for them a king, that he would go before them in battle. And Samuel tells them, here's what that's going to mean to you. In verse 10 of 1 Samuel chapter 8, Samuel told all the words of Jehovah unto the people that asked of him a king. And he said, this will be the manner of the king that shall reign over you. He will take your sons and appoint them unto him for his chariots and to be his horsemen. And they shall run before his chariots. And he will appoint them unto him for captains of thousands and captains of fifties. And he will set some to plow his ground and to reap his harvest and to make his instruments of war and the instruments of his chariots. And he will take your daughters to be perfumers and to be cooks and to be bakers. And he will take your fields and your vineyards and your olive yards, even the best of them that give them to his servants. And he will take the tenth of your seed and of your vineyards to give it to his officers and to his servants. And he will take your men servants and your maid servants and your goodliest young men and your asses and put them to his work. And he will take the tenth of your flocks and ye shall be his servants, and ye shall cry out in that day because of your king whom ye shall have chosen you, and Jehovah will not answer you in that day. But the people said, oh, but we'll have a king. Now look at what Samuel is telling them. He'll take your vineyards. Here's Naboth and here's King Ahab. And what is King Ahab trying to do? He's trying to take Naboth's vineyard. I want your vineyard. And look at verse 2. It tells us in the latter part of that verse, I will give thee for it a better vineyard than it, or if it seem good to thee, I will give thee the worth of it in money. We might look at that and say, well, that's a good thing.
Ahab is not displaying the height of his wickedness because, after all, he's trying to make a deal with Naboth. He's trying to exchange vineyards or give him the worth in money. In other words, to buy it from him rather than to just take it. Well, we might look at that and say, well, that's commendable on his part, but not so. You see, Naboth recognized what God had imposed upon him. In Numbers chapter 36 and in verse 7, he was not to get rid of his father's vineyard. This was a heritage of his tribe, and he was to keep it. We learn also in Leviticus chapter 25, in the passages listed on the board, that Naboth could not sell or give away the vineyard that was his heritage. He couldn't do that. Now, that's going to be important to us in just a moment, but what we want to see back in our text of 1 Kings chapter 21 is that Naboth in verse 3 said unto Ahab, Jehovah forbid it me. You see, I can't do that. God told me not to do that. We can read that back in Leviticus and in Numbers. But look further. He said that I should give the inheritance of my fathers to thee. And Ahab came into his house heavy and displeased because of the word which Naboth the Jezreelite had spoken to him. For he had said, I will not give thee the inheritance of my fathers. And he laid him down upon his bed and turned away his face and would eat no bread. Now we look at that and say, well, Ahab pouted. We look at our children, our grandchildren in some cases. And we fuss about that and say, well, they're pouting. They didn't get their way. And like Ahab, he lays on the bed and turns his face to the wall and don't want to talk to anybody, won't eat. What's he doing? He's pouting. He's upset because he didn't get his way. The Scriptures teach us to be content with the things that we have in 1 Timothy chapter 6 and in verse 6. But Ahab was not content. He was king of the northern 10 tribes. He could have anything that he wanted. But he didn't have Naboth's vineyard, and he wanted that, and he pouched because he doesn't get it. Now, we might look at a fellow like that and say, what a spoiled child. And that's right. Ahab should have been more mature than that, but that's what we see in Ahab. He's used to getting what he wants, and he didn't get it this time. Naboth said, you can't have it. Now let's look at Jezebel. Jezebel, I can't think about her without using the expression, that old wicked Jezebel, because that's what she was. She painted up her eyes to look like somebody important. She ruled over her husband. She thought that she was somebody important. For after all, her dad was the king of the Sidonians. She brought among the people of God the worship of Asherah. And I want you to notice that in the Greek, that's synonymous with Aphrodite. And if that doesn't ring any bells in your mind, it ought to as you study the book of 1 Corinthians. Because the temple of Aphrodite in the Greek world was housed in the city of Corinth. And we've talked about that in numerous studies in the past, where in the temple of Aphrodite in Corinth, there was housed 1,000 prostitutes to engage in worship, as it were, in ungodly and immoral acts unto the goddess Aphrodite. Friend, that's what Jezebel was connected with. She was not a nice lady. In fact, we abuse the word lady in reference to Jezebel. But what did she do? In 1 Kings chapter 18, we saw that Obadiah said that she's killed the prophets of God. I don't know how many there were, but Obadiah spared 100 of them. What else do we learn about Jezebel? In 1 Kings chapter 19, as she threatens the life of Elijah. Evidently, she has something planned, for it tells us, so let the gods do to me and more also, if I make not thy life as the life of one of them by tomorrow about this time. This is a direct threat from Jezebel, not from Ahab. This came from Jezebel. She obviously realized that she had the authority to enforce that. She had something in mind. But furthermore, in the passage that was read in your hearing by Brother Richard just a few moments ago from 1 Kings chapter 21, she has a plan to supply that which her husband desires. That's Naboth's vineyard. I'll get it for you. Don't worry about it, honey. I'll get that. Look, if you will, at verse 5. It says, "But Jezebel, his wife, came to him and said unto him, Why is thy spirit so sad that thou eatest no bread? And he said unto her, Because I spake unto Naboth, the Jezreelite, and said unto him, Give me thy vineyard for money, or else, if it please thee, I will give thee another vineyard for it. And he answered, I will not give thee my vineyard. And Jezebel, his wife, said unto him, Dost thou now govern the kingdom of Israel? Arise and eat bread, and let thy heart be merry. I will give thee the vineyard of Naboth the Jezreelite. I'll take care of that." So she writes a letter, and she usurps the authority of her husband to do so. She's not the king. He is. But she's acting through him, or he's rather acting through her, as it were. She's usurping his authority as she writes the letter in her husband's name and sealed it with his seal, and then sent it to the elders and to the nobles that were in his city and that dwelt with Naboth. And what does she say? She said, "Proclaim a fast, and set Naboth on high among the people, and set two men, base fellows, before him, and let them bear witness against him, saying, Thou didst curse God and the king, and then carry him out and stone him to death." Now that's a plan, isn't it? That's a real lengthy plan, isn't it? Very detailed. No! You find some liars to say that he cursed the king and he cursed God, and kill him. End of story. And that's what they did. Now you look at this wicked woman. She had the authority to put that in play. And she killed Naboth, or had these men do it. But when the report came about Naboth, look at who it comes to. It came to Jezebel. And she then goes to her husband and said, "Oh, you know what? Naboth's dead. Go take his vineyard." "Yeah, Ahab, I'll take care of that." And she did. She laid a plot of murder to take Naboth's vineyard, and so she did. In chapter 21, if you'll drop down in that text to verse 25, it tells us, "But there was none like unto Ahab, who did sell himself to do that which was evil in the sight of Jehovah, whom Jezebel his wife stirred up." What does that tell us about Ahab and Jezebel? Ahab was bad enough on his own. But now he's got a wicked wife that stirs him up and makes him worse than he ever would have been by himself. She dictated to her husband. Now what else do we want to note? Well, we need to be careful about that, don't we? About who we marry, we'll talk more about that in just a bit. God was concerned about a man multiplying his wives. You remember back over in 1 Kings chapter 17? 1 Kings chapter 17. 1 Kings chapter 17. Reading beginning. No. Deuteronomy chapter 17. I'm sorry. Thanks for the help there, Richard, but that's not what I was looking for. Deuteronomy chapter 17. Beginning in verse 14. Moses said, "When thou art come into the land which Jehovah thy God giveth thee, and shalt possess it, and shalt dwell therein, and shalt say, I will set a king over me like all the nations round about me, thou shalt surely set him king over thee whom Jehovah thy God shall choose. One from among thy brethren shalt thou set king over thee. Thou mayest not put a foreigner over thee who is not thy brother. Only he shall not multiply horses to himself, nor cause the people to return to Egypt to the end that he may multiply horses, for as much as Jehovah saith unto you, ye shall henceforth return no more that way." Look at verse 17. "Neither shall he multiply wives to himself, that his heart turn not away, neither shall he greatly multiply to himself silver and gold." Point a finger at Solomon. What did he do? Well, he multiplied wives. And some of the wives that he had, even as he married Pharaoh's daughter, was to form a political alliance. But what did God say about that? You be careful who you marry, because your wife may very well turn you away from God. When we look at Acts chapter 5, we read about Ananias and Sapphira. And the Apostle Peter rebuked them because they had connived or agreed together to lie to God. Well, one of them was bad enough, but now we have one supporting the other. They had made an alliance between them to do the thing that's wrong. They worsened everything. And of course, they both died. And we see that principle. As Paul sets it forth in 1 Corinthians chapter 15 and verse 33, when he said, "Be not deceived. Evil companions corrupt good morals." Do you want to be married to an evil person that's going to be a wife to you like Sapphira? Or be a wife to you like the many wives that Solomon had that turned him to the practices of idolatry? Or do you want to have a wife like Jezebel who would stir you up to do evil things? No, you don't want a wife like that. But now let's look at Naboth. Naboth. Let's go back to 1 Kings. 1 Kings chapter 21. When Ahab came to Naboth in verse 2 and said, "Give me thy vineyard," Naboth said in verse 3, "I can't do that." He said that I should, or rather, Jehovah forbid it me, that I should give the inheritance of my fathers unto thee. You see, I can't do that. Here's what God said. Let's turn back to Numbers chapter 36. Numbers chapter 36. You see, Naboth knew what the Scriptures teach. In verse 7 of Numbers chapter 36, the text tells us, "So shall no inheritance of the children of Israel remove from tribe to tribe. For the children of Israel shall cleave everyone to the inheritance of the tribe of his fathers." Well, isn't that what Naboth is trying to do? He's trying to obey what God said by cleaving to the land that was given to his fathers, given to the tribe of which he was a part. Now, because you're a good person, because you're a very conscientious person, does that mean then that people are always going to treat you good and respect your conscience? Well, no. What happened to Naboth? Jezebel said, "You take him out there and you make a feast and you get some base fellows, people that will lie about him, and you get them to say that he has cursed God and cursed the king and stone him to death." Well, what about Naboth? He's a good fellow. He's trying to obey God. But that didn't prevent those fellows from lying about him. It didn't prevent him from dying. They lied about the Lord and he was crucified. Stephen was accused of speaking against Moses and the law, and they stoned Stephen to death. Paul was accused of a number of things. The text tells us many grievous charges, and what they do to him. Read in 2 Corinthians chapter 11, beginning in verse 23, and you read a laundry list of things they did to him, including stoning him in Acts chapter 14 in Lystra to the extent they thought they had killed him. You see, just because you're a good person, just because you're very conscientious, does not mean that folks are going to respect you and treat you right. When we look at the Old Testament worthies of faith, Hebrews chapter 11, we see that many of them were stoned. They were sawn asunder. The writer tells us, "Of which the world was not worthy." Great, fabulous servants of God, but they were mistreated. Stephen was stoned. Paul was stoned. The Lord was crucified. But we see good. We see conscience. And we also see that those who are innocent often suffer. Now, there are many reasons why that's true, but one I want you to be aware of is your suffering may often be subject to those that are around you. And there are ugly, evil people around us that don't care that you're a good person, don't care that you're conscientious, and you suffer because they do wrong things. Now, that's just a given. That was true during Old Testament as well as New Testament times. But I want to again call your attention to what has been said to King Ahab. Back up, if you will, into the 20th chapter. In the 20th chapter, in verse 42, the prophet said, "Thus saith Jehovah, Because thou hast let go out of thy hand the man whom I had delivered to destruction, therefore thy life shall go for his life, and thy people for his people. Well, you see, Ahab doesn't receive good news even before he asks for Naboth's vineyard. But what about after he has taken it? Look at verse 17. Verse 17 of chapter 21. Chapter 21, verse 17. And the word of Jehovah came to Elijah the Tishbite, saying, Arise, go down to meet Ahab, king of Israel, who dwelleth in Samaria. Behold, he is in the vineyard of Naboth, where he has gone down to take possession of it. And thou shalt speak unto him, saying, Thus saith Jehovah, Hast thou killed and also taken possession? And thou shalt speak unto him, saying, Thus saith Jehovah, In the place where dogs lick the blood of Naboth, shall dogs lick thy blood, even thine. We're going to come back to that in just a moment. But Naboth is not receiving very good news here, is he? Well, the text continues. In verse 21, it says, Behold, I will bring evil upon thee, and will utterly sweep thee away, and will cut off from Ahab every man child, and him that is shut up, and him that is left at large in Israel, and I will make thy house like the house of Jeroboam the son of Nebat, and like the house of Baasha the son of Ahijah, for the provocation wherewith thou hast provoked me to anger, and hast made Israel to sin. And of Jezebel also spake Jehovah, saying, The dogs shall eat Jezebel by the rampart of Jezreel. Him that dieth of Ahab in the city, the dogs shall eat. And him that dieth in the field shall the birds of the heavens eat. But there was none like unto Ahab, who did sell himself to do that which was evil in the sight of Jehovah, whom Jezebel his wife stirred up. And he did very abominably in following idols, according to all that the Amorites did, whom Jehovah cast out before the children of Israel. Ahab and Jezebel don't have a very bright future, do they? But look, if you will, beginning in verse 27, and see how that Ahab reacts. Verse 27. It came to pass, when Ahab heard those words, that he rent his clothes and put sackcloth upon his flesh, and fasted and lay in sackcloth and went softly. And the word of Jehovah came unto Elijah the Tishbite, saying, Seest thou how Ahab humbleth himself before me? Because he humbleth himself before me, I will not bring the evil days in his, or the evil in his days, but in his son's days will I bring the evil upon his house. Now flag goes up. Ahab has heard some pretty harsh words from the prophet of God. You're going to be eaten of dogs. You want to hear that? Your wife is going to be eaten of dogs. You want to know that? You're not going to have any descendants to reign on your throne. Every one of them is going to be killed. You want to hear that? Now, what the prophet has said is absolutely right. How does Ahab react to that? He puts on sackcloth and ashes, as it were. He humbles himself. Now, he's reacted to a true message. The prophet has told him rightly what's about to come. How does he react? Fasting in tears. Oh, I am so sorry. Parents, have you ever talked with your children about something that they did, and in terms of punishment and consequence, and now we see there is great sorrow on behalf of the child? And we may then be heard to say these words, Sorry, don't get it. That don't fix it. Now, my friend, look at what Ahab has done. Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, right. I'm real sorry. Ahab is sorry because of the terror of the consequence. But do you see a turning on behalf of Ahab? Does he still have Naboth's vineyard? Yeah, still got that. Does he still worship the idols? Yeah, he still has those. He's not torn those down. Has he abandoned his arrogance? You want to see an illustration of that? Drop down into the next chapter where we see that Jehoshaphat came to Ahab, the king of Israel, and they have a common enemy. And if you'll read beginning in verse 7, Jehoshaphat said, "Is there not here a prophet of Jehovah besides that we may inquire of him?" Well, you're familiar with that text. Ahab wants to inquire, but he wants to inquire of his chosen prophets. But Jehoshaphat said, "Isn't there a prophet of God that we can ask him?" Oh yeah, there's one, but you see, he never says anything good about me. In verse 8, "I hate him, for he doth not prophesy good concerning me, but evil." Well, what is it that Micaiah has to say about Ahab? In verse 14, it tells us, "And Micaiah said, As Jehovah liveth, what Jehovah saith unto me, that will I speak. And when he was come to the king, and the king said unto him, Micaiah, shall we go to Ramoth-Gilead to battle, or shall we forbear? He answered him and said, Go up and prosper, and Jehovah will deliver it into the hand of the king. And the king said unto him, How many times shall I adjure that thou may speak unto me nothing but the truth in the name of Jehovah? And he said, I saw all Israel scattered upon the mountains, as sheep that have no shepherd. And Jehovah said, These have no master. Let them return, every man to his house in peace. And the king of Israel said to Jehoshaphat, Did I not tell thee that he would not prophesy good concerning me, but evil?" What is it that Micaiah is telling him? Buddy, you're going to be defeated. That's what's going to happen to you. Well, no wonder Ahab didn't want to talk with Micaiah. Micaiah didn't have anything to say that was good. Now, certainly we learn that his arrogance does not indicate an attitude of repenting. His continuing to maintain Naboth's vineyard does not indicate that he has repented. His continuing the idols in the land of Israel, the northern 10 tribes, indicates that he's not repented of idolatrous worship. There's little or no evidence of a change of heart. But back up in the text, chapter 21. In verse 19, as Elijah approaches Ahab, it says, "And thou shalt speak unto him, saying, Thus saith Jehovah, hast thou killed and also taken possession? And thou shalt speak unto him, saying, Thus saith Jehovah, in the place where dogs licked the blood of Naboth, shall dogs lick thy blood. And Ahab said unto Elijah, Hast thou found me, O mine enemy?" You looking for me? Have you found me? Arrogance on behalf of Ahab. In verse 25, we learn that Ahab has sold himself to do evil. You talk about making a deal with the devil. That's what Ahab's interested in. But the prophet says the dogs will lick your blood, just like they did the blood of Naboth. Well, we see that fulfilled in 1 Kings chapter 22, in verse 37 and 38, the text tells us, "So the king died and was brought to Samaria, and they buried the king in Samaria." Now, you know what happened to King Ahab, don't you? He put on his armor and he went out to battle, and just like Micaiah had said, he was killed. Someone shot an arrow, and it came right in the seam of the armor and ultimately killed Ahab, and he bled in the chariot. And they brought the chariot home and they washed it out. And guess what? The dogs licked up the blood of Ahab just like they had that of Naboth. But not only so. You remember how that God said you won't have any descendants to sit on your throne? Turn over, if you will, to 2 Kings chapter 9. 2 Kings chapter 9. Read with me beginning, if you would please, in verse 26. Verse 26. We'll pick it up at verse 24. It says, "And Jehu drew his bow with his full strength and smote Joram," that's the son, Jehoram, the son of Ahab, "smote Joram between his arms, and the arrow that went out," or "the arrow went out at his heart, and he sunk down in his chariot. Then said Jehu to Bidkar, his captain, Take up and cast him in the portion of the field of Naboth the Jezreelite." Talk about coincidence. "For remember how that when I and thou rode together after Ahab, his father, laid this burden," or I'm going to say that right, rode together after Ahab his father, Jehovah laid this burden upon him. Surely I have seen yesterday the blood of Naboth and the blood of his son, saith Jehovah, and I will requite thee in this plat, saith Jehovah. Now therefore take and cast him into the plat of ground according to the word of Jehovah. Now Ahab's son is dead. But what happens? What happens? Well, when his son is dead, we again see the fulfillment of this very thing. Turn over to 1 Kings chapter 19, verse 21. 1 Kings chapter 19, that's not the passage that I'm looking for. So we'll pass beyond that. But we do want to see that Ahab's son was killed and the descendants of Ahab were no more. Now, look further in 2 Kings chapter 9. In 2 Kings chapter 9, verse 9 and 10 is the passage, by the way, that I was looking for. It says there, "And I will make the house of Ahab like the house of Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, and like the house of Baasha, the son of Ahijah. And the dogs shall eat Jezebel and the portion of Jezreel, and there shall be none to bury her." And he opened the door and fled. Now what I want you to see is a very simple point. And that is, the dogs will lick your blood was fulfilled with Ahab, fulfilled with his son as his son was killed, and other folks who knew Ahab were also killed. I want to read this with you in 2 Kings chapter 10. Begin there at verse 1 with me. It says, "And Ahab had 70 sons in Samaria. And Jehu wrote letters and sent to Samaria unto the rulers of Jezreel, even the elders, and unto them that brought up the sons of Ahab, saying, And now as soon as this letter cometh to you, seeing your master's sons are with you, and there are with you chariots and horses and fortified cities, a fortified city also in armor, look ye out the best and meetest of your master's son, and set him on his father's throne, and fight for your master's house. But they were exceedingly afraid, and said, Behold, the two kings stood not before him. How then shall we stand? And he that was over the household, and he that was over the city, the elders also, and they that brought up the children, sent to Jehu, saying, We are thy servants, and will do all that thou shalt bid us. We will not make any man king. Do thou that which is good in thine own eyes. Look now at verse 6. And he wrote a letter a second time to them and said, If ye be on my side, and if ye will hearken unto my voice, take ye the heads of the men your master's sons, and come to me to Jezreel by tomorrow this time. Now the king's sons, being 70 persons, were with the great men of the city who brought them up. And it came to pass, when the letter came to them, that they took the king's sons and slew them, even 70 persons, and put their heads in baskets and sent them to Jezreel. And there came a messenger and told him, saying, They have brought the heads of the king's sons. And he said, Lay ye them in two heaps at the entrance of the gate until the morning. And it came to pass in the morning that he went out and stood and said to all the people, Ye are righteous. Behold, I conspired against my master and slew him. But who smote all these? Know now that there shall fall unto the earth nothing of the word of Jehovah, which Jehovah spake concerning the house of Ahab. For Jehovah hath done this, which he spake by his servant Elijah. So Jehu smote all that remained of the house of Ahab in Jezreel, and all his great men, and his familiar friends, and his priest, until he left him none remaining." How'd you like to be a friend of Ahab? You see, he didn't have anybody to sit on his throne. Just like Jeroboam, and just like Baasha. They took his 70 sons, and cut their heads off, and put them in a basket, and made piles at the gates of the city. And you want to know what happened to Ahab? That's the end of him. But what about old wicked Jezebel? Jezebel. The prophet said, the dogs will eat you. You know, an interesting thing about time, it doesn't change what God said. Ahab's dead. Dogs have eaten him. Jezebel continues to live. For about 14 years, Jezebel lives. And if you'll note further in the text in 2 Kings chapter 9, beginning in verse 7, the text there tells us what's going to take place with Jezebel. Jezebel. Well, in the text of verses 7 through 10, the blood of these is going to be shed. There's not going to be anyone to sit on the throne. But look, if you will, please, beginning at verse 30. Verse 30. It says, "And when Jehu was come to Jezreel, Jezebel heard of it, and she painted her eyes and attired her head and looked out at the window. And as Jehu entered in at the gate, she said, 'Is it peace, thou Zimri, thy master's murderer?' And he lifted up his face to the window and said, 'Who is on my side? Who?' And there looked out to him two or three eunuchs. And he said, 'Throw her down.' And they threw her down. And some of her blood was sprinkled on the wall and on the horses. And he trod her underfoot. And when he was come in, he did eat and drink. And he said, 'See now to this cursed woman and bury her, for she is a king's daughter.' And they went to bury her, but they found no more of her than the skull and the feet and the palms of her hands. Wherefore they came back and told him. And he said, 'This is the word of Jehovah, which he spake by his servant Elijah the Tishbite, saying, In the portion of Jezreel shall the dogs eat the flesh of Jezebel, and the body of Jezebel shall be as dung upon the face of the field in the portion of Jezreel, so that they shall know, or shall not say, This is Jezebel.'" Won't even know who she is. Now that's graphic. That's plain. But that's what happened. Now what can we learn from all of that? Well, we need to be careful about who we marry. We might be married to somebody like Solomon was married to. All those many wives who turned his heart away from God. We might be married to somebody like Abigail was married to a fool, Nabal. Or we might be like Ahab, married to somebody like Jezebel. Now we see that Solomon and Ahab certainly had their faults. But they were egged on, if I can use that expression, by the people that they were married to. Fulfill your role. What was it that Jezebel did? She took control of Ahab. "I'll get it for you. I'll take care of this." The report came to her. She was responsible. Beware of selfishness. Ahab wanted a vineyard that he couldn't have. And he sat down and pouted. You know, sometimes we just don't get everything we want. And sometimes we don't get everything we want for a very long time. Maybe even a lifetime we don't get everything we want. What do we do about that? We sit down and pout. No, that don't fix it. Sometimes we have to learn to accept that we just can't have it. Solomon wrote in Ecclesiastes 9, "The race is not always to the swiftest." What do we learn from that? There are some inequities of life that I can't fix, and I can't make it happen just because I'm the fastest does not mean I'll win the race. Furthermore, we need to learn about repentance. Ahab really didn't understand bringing forth fruits worthy of repentance. Sackcloth and ashes might demonstrate humility, but it doesn't demonstrate godly sorrow. Repentance was the end that we're looking for, and we don't see that on behalf of Ahab. But when we look at Ahab or Jezebel, we see that there's always consequences. Theirs were very severe. You'll be eaten by the dogs. But we also learn that God always does what He says. We've noticed in this reading the number of times that this happened according to what the prophet Elijah said. God always does what He says. Now, if we can go away tonight with these lessons, our study's been profitable. Maybe we've learned something. It's an interesting study, I think, to talk about some of these Old Testament characters. But perhaps I'm talking about one of the audience that needs to make your life right, whether it be obeying the gospel and becoming a Christian or correcting things that are wrong in your life. You need to do that now, while you have time and opportunity, you believe that Jesus is the Christ, would you turn from sin motivated by godly sorrow, confess your faith, and be baptized into Christ? You can do it tonight. If something's wrong, you realize your life is not right, you can fix that tonight. If we can help you make that known while together we stand and while we sing.